Welcome to Sex Unshackled. I am Becky Crepsley Fox, and this podcast is where sexuality and spirituality meet. Today on Sex Unshackled, I have Eva Bloom with me. Eva is an award-winning queer sexuality educator and sex science communicator. They are the creator of the digital sexual wellness program, Fuck the Patriarchy, Fuck Yourself, and the YouTube web series, What's My Body Doing? I am super excited to have Eva here with me today. Can you please tell the listeners to support you to this work?
Yeah, so I'm so excited to be here. Eva Bloom, you, she, they pronouns. What brought me to this work? I've been a sexuality and relationship nerd kind of as long as I can remember, or as long as like sex and relationships became relevant or like interesting to me. I remember like binge watching like YouTube, and there was this like little Canadian MTV show called One Girl, Five Gays, which was like a round table talk about sexuality. And I was like 16, like, tell me everything. I am listening with rapt attention. I always thought it was a really interesting combination of kind of like looking at like dynamics of how people exist together, and kind of like the gendered aspect was very interesting to me too. And then I also, like many people at the beginning of their sexual journey, did not have the most fulfilling experiences. So kind of those not so great experiences definitely pushed me to like learn more. And then share what I learned with other people.
Amazing. I love it. So many sexuality professionals I speak with, this stuff came so young. You know, we were so interested in sex and relationships and dynamics and everything for as long as we can remember. And I just think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I love it. Little sex nerds out in the world, just like, there's got to be a book somewhere. I can't be the only one that's interested in this stuff.
So as I mentioned, you have a digital sexual wellness program called Fuck the Patriarchy, Fuck Yourself. Now, can you explain to the listeners what this is, and what the patriarchy is, and your views on this?
Yes.
Drum roll, please.
So the program is a 14-week course that has a bunch of different workshops that I've created throughout it. And I have like sexy homework where I have kind of like practical ways for people to reflect on it and build a pleasure practice. And really kind of the whole purpose of the course is to say that for so many people who aren't men, we feel like the root of our like sexual insecurities or problems are within ourselves, and that like we're broken and we're wrong. But the point of the program is to kind of flip that on its head and be like, actually, like the thing that's wrong is all of these like systems of oppression that have taught us all these lies about sex and really set us up to fail in like having a fulfilling sexual relationship with ourselves. So we unpack all that stuff and start to build something good and nice. In terms of what is the patriarchy, the course is called Fuck the Patriarchy, Fuck Yourself, because fuck the cis hetero patriarchy is a little bit of a mouthful. But when, but whenever I talk about the patriarchy, I always try to expand it to the cis hetero patriarchy, because I feel like it's all very much like intertwined, and you gotta talk about all of it. But basically, like how I conceptualize the patriarchy is that there is kind of a social, historical, systemic kind of power differential, but that is gendered. So cisgender, heterosexual, white, able-bodied, thin men are at the top with kind of, again, historical systemic power, and people kind of other genders do not have access to that same power. So yeah, I like to talk about also how the patriarchy requires a gender binary. So it needs to say like, there are men and they have penises, and there are women and they have vaginas, and there is a biological difference, and thus the creation of like gender roles and heteronormativity is like built into all of that. So I try to remind folks that like to break down the patriarchy, we also have to say fuck you to the gender binary and to heteronormativity and all of those things too.
Yeah, I love how you explain it, because if I were to explain, I would just be like, cis het white men. I don't, you know, they're the words.
That's definitely colloquially in my day-to-day life. That's the shorthand.
So what do you think are some of the lies and concepts that patriarchy has kind of imposed on us?
For sure. I mean, I think the big one that I talk about a lot is the very narrow definition that we have for sex and sexuality, that like real forms of sex are penetrative sex, like penis and vagina or anal sex. And that all types of other sex gets called other things, like foreplay, and like people get very confused as to how like queer women have sex. Like there's not a penis, what's even happening? And it just so happens that like the type of sex that we consider societally to be like quote unquote real sex is the type of sex that brings cishet men the most pleasure, and the types of other sex that brings other people pleasure, like oral sex and like hand sex and like sensuality, are the type of sex that like statistically is more pleasurable for queer people and trans people and women. So that's one of the big ones.
Yeah, and I think this concept's so interesting because you know, we know that virginity is a social construct, but some other people might not yet be understanding that. And I think with the kind of straight population, it's about men and women having sex, or boys and girls, you know, teenagers having sex, and it's penis and vagina, and that is the initiation into sexualhood. When we don't class any type of, you know, what we call foreplay, when in reality, people have been having sex in multiple types of ways long before perhaps they had this penetration, but it's just not seen as that. And it's exactly what you say, you know, well, then does vulva owner and vulva owner sex together not count as sex? You know, is it only penetration that counts? And where did that idea come from? And the idea of virginity just makes my blood boil.
Totally. I don't know. And like, I think, if we look like across the lifespan too, like there are lots of times when like having this broader definition of sex is helpful. Like I know that there's some research around like couples who just like given birth and stuff. And like having this broader definition of sex, like postpartum, is actually like hugely beneficial in terms of intimacy. And also like older people, like when our bodies change, again, like having a broader definition of sex can be helpful. So it's really a good thing all around.
Yeah, and penetration can just hurt some people. Yes, and just,
absolutely.
You know, many people, penetration hurts many people and just isn't that much pleasure for lots of people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's so important that we broaden this definition.
Mm-hmm, totally. And it's also just not people's favorite things. It just might not be what you want to do.
it's just
an option on the menu. It's not the whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And I know you talk about queer perspectives on sexuality. So what is a queer perspective on sexuality?
Yeah, well, I think kind of two big things. One is this like broadening the definition of what sex can be, and also decentering cis men's pleasure and ideas of sexuality. So really being like removing it from this pedestal or like this central, like we are the people who say what is sex and what isn't sex. And if anything is going wrong, it is your problem and not my problem. So yeah, I think those are two of the big tenets.
And how can non-queer folk liberate themselves? So I guess this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, right? So broadening the definition, even for people who are in, I don't know, heterosexual relationships, because if we broaden this template of what sex can look like, then that's like one of the concepts that non-queer folk can take. Is there anything else that you can think of?
Yeah, in the course I also talk a little bit about like the male gaze and self-objectification. And I think also like decentering the male gaze. I think even in something like a dating profile, like if you're someone who's dating and like is interested in dating a man, I know like for myself when I was out on dating apps, dating men, there is this like pressure or this feeling from society to be like, how can I be as palatable as possible to men? How can I not offend them? How can I like be appealing to them? When oftentimes that's like for many people, you end up like sacrificing or downplaying part of yourself and your own needs. So I think people who like are straight or are dating men, shifting from like a male gaze to their own gaze, to be like genuinely like, what expression of myself brings me the most joy? And like, if I think about a beloved friend or someone who I know like sees me wholly, like how can I shift my gaze to that too? And I think like in terms of sex too, people who aren't men are socialized very much to be like sexual objects, and the focus is on like appearance and like performing as opposed to pleasure. And kind of no matter your orientation or kind of gender, shifting the perspective to be like, no, actually my sexuality is not for the performance of men. I'm allowed to be embodied, and I'm allowed to feel pleasure, and I'm allowed to kind of experience a full connected experience that I want to have.
Can you just explain to the listeners what the male gaze is, in case they haven't heard that phrase before?
Totally. There was a whole time when I was on TikTok a couple months ago, and I was on male gaze TikTok. There were so many beautiful people theorizing. I was like, yes. So the male gaze is actually like a term that comes from like cinema or film. The idea that like in a lot of movies that are oftentimes directed and produced by men, you get these like shots of kind of disembodied women and queer and trans people. And very much that their whole character is simply an object and to support the men in kind of the movie. And I think like the male gaze is similar, if you've heard that term before, similar to like a sexual objectification that exists kind of in our day-to-day lives and culture. And that can look like kind of street harassment, or just like, yeah. And sexual objectification can also get turned inward, where women and non-men, queer and trans people, can kind of be very focused on how am I being perceived? Am I acceptable and palatable to the men around me? So yeah, those are some definitions of some terms.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you say about the male gaze turning inwards, because I was with a group of friends once, and there was a girl there who I knew a bit, but I didn't know really well. She was lovely. And we were living in London at the time, so we're doing a lot of walking, right? We walk around London, and I was wearing trainers, and we had this conversation about how I was wearing trainers because they're comfortable. And she was wearing like these, she looked amazing. She was wearing these like massive heels, and she was like, yeah, you know, I find heels really uncomfortable as well. And I was like, why are you wearing them then? You know, you've been wearing them all day. And she said, oh, I really like that I get more more comments of men when I wear them. And I think that is exactly that male gaze being turned inwards, you know, where we feel like I have to go through pain because that way I'm gonna feel more seen by the male population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's so hard too, because it's like, that's not her fault. Like, she's making the best decision. Like, she's making a decision within like a fucked up system. And truly, like, male validation is such a like powerful currency, and when we like grow up in the patriarchy, it's so hard to like disengage from that, especially when like it can be a source of power in some ways, but then also like it's all it the power can also have like a sad underbelly, whether that's like pain or harassment or something like that.
Yeah, it's such a complex system. I remember seeing some research ages ago, so I don't know the figures or anything, but it was basically about how people get employed. It was about how good-looking people, you know, air quotes about good-looking, but good-looking people get employed more than, air quotes, non-good-looking people. Mm-hmm. And that's just shocking, actually, if we think about it. And that's when we're talking about male gays having privilege.
Totally. Right?
And
yeah.
it having power and it getting some people to some places. And, you know, I can't deny that I, you know, don't feed into that. Like, of course I do. I think nearly all of us do in some way. But it's just kind of upsetting sometimes the lengths people go to. And I've been there before to feed into that structure.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it's definitely something I've noticed too, like in like cutting my hair and like looking more visibly queer. I think, yeah, I'll like go into that mode where I'm like, oh, like the men around me will help me or whatever. And I'm like, no, actually, like now that you look like this, they're somehow a little bit less inclined to be like so gracious and generous with you. Yeah. And it's definitely, yeah.
So you have like that lived experience of the difference.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting, like over the course of the pandemic, like I think a lot of people have lived in a state where the male gaze has become less prevalent, especially if you like don't live with any men like at your home. So it's been kind of liberating to be like, oh, what is that? What do I actually want? But then when you re-enter kind of the world, you're like, oh, okay, it's the difference was not like a gradual one. It was like I was perceived one way when I had long hair going into the pandemic, and now I have interacted with in another way with a mullet. But I mean, also like I'm still like a white person, I'm still like a small fat person, so I still have a lot of privileges like navigating in the world.
Yeah, and that's something similar to what I've heard from the trans community about how one of the biggest things that people have lived through when they transitioned is how differently they get treated as a different gender than what they were before. Yeah. And yeah. I was also thinking about what you were saying earlier about my, you know, from maybe a women's perspective or a vulva owner's perspective, like my sexuality isn't for you, isn't for penis owners, isn't for men, because that's also something that I've heard. You know, oh, you're a lesbian. What did a man do to you? Or, oh, you're a lesbian, can I be there? Can I join in? You know, and it's like, what part of my sexuality has anything to do with you? Yeah.
I saw on TikTok a radio interview of a man straight up saying those words. Yeah, because seriously, like men and also everybody is taught that sex is for them. So the idea of like lesbians is, you get all sorts of really like fucked up reactions to the idea that like, actually, sorry, this is not for you. Yeah. And the fetishization, and I think like the, cause then you all like, you get queerness and like sexism together in like the minimization of like lesbian and like bi women's like identity is a real and like valid identity.
Yeah. I wish the listeners could see our body language, like our facial expressions. I think they're missing like such an important part of what's happening in this podcast.
You hit on a hot spot for me. I'm ready to jump on the soapbox. I'm like, oh my gosh.
But I do want to put a little disclaimer that we are not men haters, right? Because I think this could sound a bit like men bashing, and that's definitely not the case. But I'm going to speak for myself. I am a patriarchy basher.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm thinking about COVID. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about the impact of what this has had on sex, both queer sex, non-queer sex, you know, and relationships. What do you think?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, as someone who like did their master's thesis on sexting, it's been very exciting to see sexting suddenly become okay.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
I'm like, oh my God, public health units are recommending people to sext. But I'm also like, because I'm like, I know the second that things go back to normal, people will jump back into being like, no, sexting's really dangerous. Don't do it. And I'm like, why? Why are we doing this abstinence only stuff around sexting? But yeah, that's been one. Also in terms of things like, at least in my corner of the internet, like a lot of people coming out and like realizing that they're queer.
I've noticed that. Yeah.
And I think part of that, I mean, my hypothesis is, I think removing the male gaze and stepping away from having to engage in the patriarchy so much and like can kind of crumble the bricks of compulsory heterosexuality, which is part of the patriarchy. The idea that like heterosexuality is mandated. It is assumed. It is propaganda to us from when we were very, very small, and not living like that. And like queer TikTok has like become an incredibly like homonormative place, I think has been very cool in helping people come to a lot of realizations.
Yeah, I think there's something about the slowing down as well that we all had to do when COVID hit, and people having space for maybe the first time in such a long time to be with their thoughts and be with themselves. And that alone has allowed such a big transition, because yeah, I've seen lots of people, I don't know, what's the word, be liberated to own their sexuality or you know, speak about the sexuality and things like that that they hadn't before. And yeah, I think this cultural slowing down was such an important thing. You know, COVID was terrible in many, many ways and still is, but the slowing down, I think, has been such an important process.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, it's the reflection piece. And I mean, I would I would also say that like I don't know whether like the systems of like capitalism are kind of intended to give us as little like leisure time as possible, and it's actually like beneficial to have people being like go 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 go, mm-hmm. and like use whatever little time you have to like make your life a little bit better, and like actually disconnecting people from themselves. And I mean, I know also myself, like I've used like work and this like go 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 mentality as a way to like ignore things about myself. So yeah, when all that stuff goes away, you're like, I can't ignore it anymore.
Yeah, well, we use work to ignore sex lives, you know. So many couples especially, or structures and relationships, find it so hard, many people, to allocate that time, that quality time and that sex time. I think the single folk find it maybe a bit easier to have that priority for some interesting reason. But yeah, couples, it's just this, myself included, especially since we got our puppy, right? I can't really blame the puppy on capitalism, but and I love him very much, but it has definitely not had a good impact on our sex life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, those are very cute. I'm gonna have to see puppy pictures later.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that's like totally speaks to like the power of like context in terms of like our sex drives. Like if you're really busy with work, if you have a new puppy or a new baby, like, and also stress too, like your brain is just not in like sexy mode. Mm-hmm. You're like, I'm exhausted from all these things, and like I really have to put all these like energy into other parts of my life. Yeah.
I see my husband like hugging and kissing Dennis is the puppy all the time. Just like, what about me? What about me? I like hugs too.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who, when seeing people interact tenderly with animals, I'm like, just very gentle. You could be gentle with me.
Exactly. So I want to hear a little bit more about the sexting. So what did you write about? Just tell me.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I went to my master's thesis supervisor and I was like, I want to do my thesis on sexting. And she was like, any other options? Like, we have lots of, and I'm like, no, I think I pretty much decided that's what we want to do. Yeah, so I had this big data set of Canadian women ages 18 to 80, but I just looked at the young adults. So I don't know the 80-year-old Canadian women's sexting habits. I'm very sad about that. But basically looking at how, like, people who sexed were also the people who were talking more about their desires, like what they like, what they don't like, and also talking about, like, sexual health, like STI testing and stuff like that. And there's been other research to show that, like, people who talk about sex, like, and sexual health via text feel more comfortable doing that in person. And kind of my hypothesis around it is, like, using sexting and text as a tool to, like, build people's comfort around having these really important, like, conversations about sex that make it more pleasurable and safer. And also that single people are sexting more, queer people are sexting more, polyamorous people are sexting more, maybe unsurprisingly.
That's fascinating. I guess it's just, yeah, learning how to have the vocabulary to talk about this stuff. I'd also be super interested to know if we would have got the same results if it was here or, you know, somewhere else, because, the Brits are a little bit uptight. When it comes to sex.
Yeah, I would totally guess that, like, there might be cultural differences. Also, the data was from a couple years ago, so I wonder if things would have changed. Yeah. Another interesting thing is that most people were not sexting very often, especially of, like, the straight dating mm-hmm. and married people. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a yearly or monthly occurrence. So you get your Christmas and birthday nude and... I'm like, cool, good to know.
And is that why you think people assume it's dangerous, because of the photo aspect that goes along with it?
Yeah. I think that's definitely a big one for people. So I try and talk a lot about kind of different apps you can use, like mm-hmm. Signal, which is, like, super encrypted. So unlike Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat, they don't have a file with your nudes on it. And also things like, there's, like, different vault apps that you can use that are password protected mm-hmm. and just, like, tools you can have, like, conversations with your partner to be, like, just explicitly say, like, this is just for you. And, like, maybe once we break up, like, please delete them, and things like not having your face in the photo. So I don't know. I think we know generally that, like, abstinence only sex ed doesn't work. So, so it's very silly to me that we think that abstinence only sex ed will work for sexting. So I try to very much be like, let's give you some harm reduction tools, because there are a lot of benefits, and, like, if you are gonna do it, you're gonna do it anyway.
Yeah, and revenge porn is now illegal here, is it, where you are?
I do not know that off the top of my head, unfortunately.
Because I think it is a genuine concern, you know, if you break up and out of spite the other person puts it on the internet, you know, this is a big deal. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if the law here has prevented it. I don't know if it's made a difference or not, but at least the patriarchy are doing something positive.
I think you're totally right that, like, it can't just be on the individuals. It has to be, like, a larger change where it's like, we're not slut shaming like women, queer and trans people anymore. Like, there's actual penalties, and, like, the system actually works to penalize people who are perpetrators of sexual violence. I would say that revenge porn is a type of sexual violence
for sure. And we're also taking animal abuse more seriously here, which I love.
Seriously.
Apparently. So who knows?
That's good. If you think that animal and human rights are obvious, but...
People getting, like, I don't know, a month or something for doing something, like, dreadful to their pet, or, like, maximum 6 months. And it's like, oh, my God, that was, like... your pet, and they trusted you, and you know, breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been awesome having you here today. Thank you so much for joining me. Can you please tell the listeners where they can find you?
Yeah, so I'm most active on Instagram at What's My Body Doing. I'm on TikTok at What's My Body Doing. I am launching the second cohort of my Fuck the Patriarchy, Fuck Yourself course. So if this conversation resonated with you and you're like, oh my gosh, I would like more, please. You can go to my website, evabloom.ca/FPFY program. First classes start October 26th. So, yeah.
Incredible. Thank you so much. It's been awesome.
Yeah, totally.